So I'm also going to talk a little bit about our monitoring program across Texas and also into Mexico and Oklahoma this year. And then I want to talk also about our website that we're going to go ahead and launch today. So I hope everyone can check it out, but I'll go through that a little bit at the end. First, I'd like to thank all of our collaborators across the state. Most of them have been doing this for a while, and we really appreciate them running the vials. We also had a consultant, Blaine Reed, run some for us this year, and Terry Pitts in Oklahoma ran our first vials up there this season. So we've talked about the economic impact of bollworm some before. This just gives you an idea. For the statewide program for Texas, we've been going across several of these counties and also, like I said, into Mexico and Oklahoma, doing this adult vial test monitoring with cypermethrin. And again, it's really similar to what Fred was talking about on their program. We catch the adult male moths from the field and run them in the vial test. However, with our test we've been using in Texas, rather than doing just a discriminating dose, we've been using a full dose of concentrations to get a better idea of how the entire population is responding. So for the places with lower levels of resistance, we've been running from 0.15 to 30 micrograms per vial, and then where we've had more resistance, we've gone from 0.3 up to 60 micrograms per vial. And we just, the same thing, we make all those vials there in our laboratory and ship them out to everybody, so they should be pretty standardized. And then we have the collaborators place one moth in each vial and evaluate for mortality after 24 hours and evaluate all of the data. So just if it's been a while since you've seen a probit line, this just kind of represents the entire population. We've got the concentration of cypermethrin across the x-axis versus the mortality on the y-axis. So for example, in this population, 10 micrograms per vial killed about 80% of this population. And so the conventional wisdom for bollworm has been that anything that dies at 3 micrograms per vial is considered a susceptible insect. Anything surviving 10 micrograms is considered resistant, with heterozygotes falling in between if they could survive 3 but would die at 10 micrograms. So I'm going to show you a lot of probit data from across our state from this year. We'll start here at Burleson County there at A&M. All the 2009 lines are going to be in this lime green color, so you can kind of point it out. But basically, I'm just going to run you through quickly and kind of show you how we compare with previous seasons and then a state summary. So last couple of years, Burleson County has looked really good. Our probit lines have been further to the left, and we've had pretty low levels of survivorship at these high rates. When you move up into the Dallas area up in Ellis County, it's also pretty similar to what we've seen the past couple of seasons up there, pretty low levels of survivorship. When you go down to Nueces County with Roy Parker, we've traditionally had a lot of problems with resistance in this area. And the line here is pretty similar to what we've seen in the past. One thing we've noticed the last couple of years, we haven't seen any survivorship at the higher rates, like 30 and 60 micrograms like we used to, but we have seen higher percent survival at the lower rates, like at 5 and 10 micrograms. So we've seen kind of a shift there where we're getting overall a little more survival, but not quite as extreme survivorship. Up in Palmer County, and again, a lot of this data looks really similar to what we've seen the last several seasons. Pretty low levels of resistance up in Palmer. Also in Swisher, I don't have any good previous data to look at for comparison. This population did have a little resistance, but the highest survivorship we saw was only at 5 micrograms per vial. Uvalde's our other trouble spot, and it's probably had the most problems in the most recent seasons with resistance. This line is as bad as the 2007 and 2008 lines. We did have some survivorship up at 60 micrograms per vial, and so I've been looking at some of the mechanisms behind this and that sort of data, but that's probably been our worst spot over the last few years. Williamson County, we used to have quite a few problems there and also in Burleson, but resistance was pretty low. This data is a little questionable. We didn't get as good of, we kind of had some problems with the population. We only got that one sampling date, so I'm not going to feel real safe with this data, but in general, it looked like resistance was lower than we had seen in the previous couple of years. So that's good, but we need to run a few more next season and be sure it's still staying down. Looking down in Mexico, again, we still haven't seen too much too much resistance going into Mexico. That was kind of the original thought, was maybe the Moths were coming from up there, but we still see pretty low levels of resistance down there. In this first year looking in Oklahoma, kind of in general, we don't ever see too high levels of resistance up here in the high plains, but every once in a while we'll have a few pockets where some hot spots show up. So we also wanted to look over into Oklahoma. So Terry ran some vials for us there. And again, pretty low levels of resistance also. We don't have anything to compare it back to, but the high survivorship was still only at 5 micrograms per vial. The last place was Tom Green, and we actually had a lot of control mortality, so I didn't get to have any data that came out well, but the highest concentration survived was 10 micrograms per vial. So there's a little resistance circulating around that population. So if you look at an overall state level, these numbers look pretty good. We only had in Uvalde County where anything was surviving 60 micrograms per vial, and we only had a few of those. Traditionally, we'll see a few 60s and several 30s. We didn't have any 30s across here. And our other hotspot here in Corpus Christi, the highest survivorship was only at 10 micrograms per vial. You see a lot of this where the highest survivorship was only at 5 micrograms per vial or less. So in general for Texas, it looks like the resistance levels went down quite a bit. If you look at the resistance ratios, so the red are significantly different than the susceptible and ratios of greater than 5 or more, and that's been about what we've seen in the past, but to a lesser extent up here in the Brazos Valley where we didn't have much resistance at all. Here again, Uvalde and Corpus Christi had the higher levels. So just to summarize, Uvalde and Nueces were the most resistant. They had LC50 resistance ratios of a little more than 9 and about 7.5. But this is quite a bit less than we've seen in the past. For Nueces, we usually would see levels of 12 to 15 fold resistance ratios sometimes in the peak of the summer. So that's an improvement. Swisher and County up in the north and also Oklahoma were significantly different than the susceptible, but the levels were pretty low. And then the rest maintained general susceptibility. We hope that's due to better management practices, but in general, we were in such a drought this year, the cotton and other crop acres were down quite a bit. There were a lot fewer applications of pyrethroids for control, so all of those dynamics, I'm sure, played a large role. We had a tough time in several counties even catching enough moss to run vials on this season, so it will be interesting. It looks like hopefully we're getting enough rain this year to get a normal crop up everywhere, and we'll see what the population resistance levels are next season. So I'd also like to thank Cotton Incorporated and the Texas State Support Committee for still sponsoring this research and continuing to go with it into the future. And then what we've done now that I want to talk about is our website. So it's got a long name, the Texas Insecticide Resistance Monitoring and Real-Time Information System, but the website's pretty simple, and it should be up and running now. It's just insecticideresistance.tamu.edu. So if y'all want to take a look at it, we'd love to get some feedback. But we got some money from EPA for this, and the eventual goal is hopefully next season we want to be able to get the resistance monitoring data up in near real time to where it's accessible from the website and everybody can see exactly what's going on. And we've worked quite a bit to try to make it pretty user-friendly, so we hope you can, if you're not too scientifically inclined, you can get the data you need to see what's going on with resistance, but we also have all of the hard data there, so if you want to see the data and the specifics, you can get into that as well. So I'm going to real quick run through what it looks like. First, you're going to get a little warning just to advise you to look at the right resolution for your computer, and it'll go ahead and tell you how to change it, but if you have a different resolution, sometimes you can't see all of the features on it, so that helps out quite a bit. It's nice, it's integrated with Google Earth, so you have this nice map. You can zoom in and out and do all sorts of things, and you can look on a statewide basis or individual counties, wherever we have any of the data. And we've got a tutorial, so this just kind of will run through, you know, what we're looking at, what the pyrethroid resistance is, and how we do the monitoring program, kind of how you can use the website, a little bit about resistance and how to interpret the ProLine data, also how to look at all of the tables and what all of this information means. So if you are a little rusty or haven't really been exposed to this, it'll hopefully explain exactly what's going on. We also try to have our literature up there with any of the stuff that's been published, and we're going to try to keep that updated. Just for example, if you wanted to look here at Burleson County, if you click on it, you can look at the overall historical data. You can look at the individual seasons and look at the probate lines or the tables. For example, this would pop up if you wanted to look at the historical probate lines, and you can click and make it larger and see what the different probates have looked like across the seasons. You can also bring up the tables that have the data with it. You can look at this kind of like the maps I showed earlier. So these are the resistance ratios by county for a specific season. And you can click and it'll show you the data for that individual county. You can look at the highest concentration of cypermethrin survived for any of the moths for that year and see what that was. And then you can kind of overlay it with all of the counties and the roads and highways just to give you a better idea of where these locations are. It even has like a map feature so you can see the distance between the locations. So there's a lot of neat stuff with it, and we hope it'll be a platform not just for cypermethrin resistance in bollworm, but hopefully other insecticides and pests in the future. So this is kind of what we have. Dr. Pietrantonio would love any feedback or comments you guys have, so if you get a chance to look at it and have any comments, this is her email address where she can be reached. So do we have time for questions?
Yes.
Yes, sir. Well, to be honest, we don't know the genetic basis yet. I was hoping to do that for my PhD program. I'm looking a lot at the mechanisms of resistance, but nobody's been able to establish a resistant colony that didn't crash. There appears to be a pretty high fitness cost associated with it. So we don't know the genetics. As far as the resistance mechanisms go, we have identified both target site and metabolic resistance mechanisms responsible. So hopefully in the future, at some point, we'll be able to establish that, but so far we don't really know. For the probits, we're looking at that 3 and 10 microgram. That's kind of data looking back towards the tobacco budworm. That's kind of been the general consensus for those. And it's held up a lot as far as when you start to see field failures. It's pretty much just based on empirical data from the previous years of kind of at what level you start to see problems with field failures and whatnot.
So if it is holding up, it should indicate at least it's almost a single gene type thing, because if it is more than multiple...
Right, and that's the thought behind it. You know, it's interesting about the fitness costs. You know, every season typically we'll see the resistance increase as you have more selection pressure, and then as the selection pressure decreases, we usually see a drop in the resistance values. And for the most part, that holds up where the resistance is pretty low to start the next season. So,
I've got a question. You said we've seen field control failures in Texas. Or are you referring to other parts of the country?
Both, but it's been a while in Texas.
I'm not familiar. On what crop are you talking about?
Well, in cotton, there were some. I mean, it's been a few years back, you know, in 03, 04, 05. Not widespread, but there's been problems. And again, you never know if those were necessarily attributed to resistance or sometimes just due to application failures, but...
Hadn't been confirmed.
Right, right. Yes?
What was the name of your website again?
It's, let me put this back up for everybody. insecticideresistance.tamu.edu.
Any other questions? We've got a minute or two left.
Fred, wasn't there some relationship between some other crops?
Yeah, you know, so Fred's doing some of that work looking at where they were coming from. We haven't done much of that work. We tried to overlay wind patterns quite a bit with John Westbrook, and trying to see first off where, you know, are we seeing migration of these resistant populations? So we're seeing continuous generations of selection. Our real thought behind it was that we were getting low rate applications for not only headworms in sorghum, but also midge and stink bugs in sorghum. And these low rates were, you know, go ahead and selecting in earlier generations. And like I said, we're going to claim that by having people not spray those, that it's helped the resistance problem, but also just the lack of crops the last few seasons could be contributing to the resistance going down. But that's kind of been our basis, is that probably there's that early selection going on in sorghum, especially for Texas.
Hey, Jeff.
Just one short comment, and that is, in North Carolina, oh, in the late 90s, we did a fair amount of this, and if we went to locations where good consultants seemed to have a control problem, that is, two applications, say, of karate, and they had survival, it didn't seem to make sense. If we put traps around those areas, at times we get survival in the 25-30% range at 10 micrograms, but with a wider trapping scheme where we just placed them randomly almost on a grid, or you count so many miles up and over and place those, survival was extremely, even at 5 micrograms, we almost couldn't get any. So the trap placement in this case made a huge difference. So you could get entirely different pictures depending on whether you put traps in these problem areas.
Right. And it's on such a large scale, it's tough to say. Just like even looking across Texas or looking across the whole Cotton Belt, you see sporadic areas, and it does look, we're starting to think it looks a lot more like it's selected right there at location more, you know. There is some evidence that it goes ahead and moves, but certainly for the corpus area, it looks like they're doing the selection right there on the spot. Thanks.
We appreciate you also giving a presentation, Brad, in a general session. If y'all didn't make the business meeting, Brad, correct me if I'm wrong, but you did win the student paper competition. So we'll give you another round of applause there.